Now it's my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. I've had the privilege of knowing tonight's speaker for a few years. She was here on our stage once before. I think it was 2012, maybe. It's been a number of years since she was here, and. You know, Mike does a great job of recording these meetings, and they're posted on a web page, and you can access them anytime you like. And once in a while, when I run out of my other CDs to listen to, I'll listen to the past meeting recordings. And I happened to hear Sally telling her story from like 2012 or whenever it was, and I just got so encouraged by her message, I have the privilege of taking AA meetings into Corcoran State Prison, and in her pitch you'll hear she's a veteran of doing work in institutions with the H&I activities, and so I thought, as I was listening to her recording, I thought, how cool would it be to get her involved with the work that we're doing out of Corcoran. And she does live in Bakersfield, so that's not too terribly far away. And so I called her up, and turns out she lives in South Bend, Indiana now. She lives in Notre Dame's backyard, as a matter of fact. And she said she'd be delighted to come to Corcoran. And we were able to work some magic with the staff out there, and gosh, it was really great to go out and serve the inmates at Corcoran State Prison with her last night. And because she can't give enough, she's a service junkie, she's here tonight with us, and it's my great privilege to introduce to you my friend, Sally.
Wow, it really makes me sound good. I'm Sally, and I am an alcoholic. Yeah, no. Every now and then I get this thing going. Y'all know why, don't you? Yeah. You know, it was a privilege to go last night to Corcoran with Bill. But I want to thank you for inviting me to Corcoran. It's been a couple of years since I was in prison, and on the message, carrying the message. And and I hadn't been able to sign. I signed up back there in Indiana, and I just got approved before I came here. So when I get back, I'll be going into South Bend, St. Joseph's South Bend Jail. And so working with the women, and I'm really excited about that. Really excited about that. I wanted to come tonight, and but man, I tell you, you know, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 24 years old, and I'll be 64 next month. And I just was so tired. And so my son-in-law, Lino, who is just it, he is it. He is the best son-in-law. He drove me here, so I'm so thrilled. I love him so much. I love the way he loves my daughter. And he's just a great guy, a great guy. Bought him a pair of boots last year for Christmas. He likes me now. So I asked him if he would still like me if he heard my story. He said, sure. I said, okay, come on, I'll let you drive me then. And Julie is here. Julie is 8 years, 8 years. And boy, has she come a long way. And I have sponsored her here, long distance, not long distance, Bakersfield. And then she sponsors Callie, who is a transplant from Southern California, as am I a transplant from Southern California. So now that you met us all, I want to tell you how very grateful I am to be here, how very grateful I am to be anywhere. In October of this year, I celebrated 35 years sober. And I often wonder how did I get here? You know, I'm looking in the mirror getting ready to go somewhere, and I'm thinking, how did I get here? In South Bend. I love South Bend, you guys. I love South Bend. I've never moved to a place. When I got there, I knew I was home until I got there. I knew I was home. And it's like 4 degrees today right now, and I'm missing all the snow. I'm so upset about that. I love the snow. I lived in the Netherlands when I was a kid, and we get 8 or 10 feet of snow. In the last couple of years over in South Bend or in Indiana, they've only had 6 or 8 inches of snow, you know, so they're getting a lot now because it's supposed to snow for 7 days, and I'm missing it all, doggone it. But I love Indiana. My home group, I don't really know the name of it, but I can tell you that it's housed at a senior hall there in Niles, Michigan, about eight miles from the Michigan border, and it has between 400 and 600 years of sobriety when I attend. I sit next to somebody who's got 47 years and somebody else got 44 years and 53 years of sitting across and ad infinitum, let me tell you. And they are old school Alcoholics Anonymous, let me tell you. They are like music to my ears. And I told them about it too when I first, from the first group I went there. And it just took one time to know that I was home. Just one time. And so anyway, I'm plugging into things. I'm trying to make a life for me. I went to school when I was here and I got some degrees. And when I got back there, I thought I'd go to school too. And I decided not to. I decided just to make a life, you know. So what I've done is I rent a little house. I'm going to buy one this summer. I'm on a bowling league. I'm a Red Hatter. Y'all know what a Red Hatter is? I'm a Red Hatter, and I like it. I like those gals. And I'm going to AA meetings, and I'm going to start going into St. Joe Jail and working with the women, and I'm very excited about it. You know, I was in H&I for 30 years, and I was talking about some of the facilities last night that I was in. Gosh, how did I get here? I'm just blown away. How did I get here? And I look at my children and my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, and I just wonder, I sometimes wish that I had better teaching tools when they were growing up so they could have had better information, you know. I learned all about being a human being and being a person and being a woman in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't learn it anywhere else. I learned it here. I learned how to stop talking like a sailor here. Somebody told me one time, he was so eloquent, he's 63 years old, Edwin Slagle from Huntington Beach. He said, "Sally, you are much too pretty to let something so ugly come out of your mouth." And I didn't get it. I just thought he liked me. You know, I just wanted people to like me. So if I acted nice around you, or I acted, or I did what you wanted me to do, I think they call that people pleasing, then you would like me. And I just wanted you to like me. I didn't know I didn't like me. I thought I liked me a whole lot. That's all I ever talked about. That's all I ever did. Everything was about me, 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 and I. But I still didn't understand. So one day it hit me, and I just, you know, it was a while. I didn't ever learn anything right out the gun in the door in AA. It took me a while. I'm slow. I'm slow at the draw. I will get there, but I'm slow at the draw. And I'm always, always okay with people telling me how I am coming across to them. Because oftentimes, well, not so much anymore, but there were many times I had no clue how you were receiving me. So I always try to look in your eyes. I have learned to look in your eyes and look at your face and watch your hands and watch your body movements when we are conversing, because that lets me know how, if I'm coming across okay in a kind manner, in a loving manner. And those are big deals to me today. I don't treat people terrible like I used to. I used to try to take everything I could from you. Not so much a thief, money thief, like cash register honesty, but I would steal your personality, or I would steal your smile or your laugh or a joke, or I'd steal something from you to make me, anything it was to make me look better. And I can't tell you when it was that I was able to stop doing that, but it was a while. It was a while. And You know, I used to think when I was first sober, and for the first few years even, that there really wasn't anything too bad wrong with me. That you guys should just accept how I am and we'll all get along just fine. Well, then I discovered that's really not the way it works either. Because I was wanting y'all to change, and when y'all would just change, then I'd be okay. And that's not the way it worked either. What ultimately started happening is that I didn't like the way that people were confronting me with things, telling me things. They would tell me things about the way I was, and I would have to tell them, no, I'm not like that. Well, then my sponsor said, you know, Sally, we never see ourselves as others do. I said, I know. They don't see how I really am. She'd pat me on the back, and she would tell me to keep coming back, that, you know. And I remember that, you know, when people would remember my name in meetings, I got so excited because I'd think, oh, my gosh, they like me. They remember me now. And I remember my friend Edwin Slagle, 63 years old, and he said, Sally, he says, you come to the Sunday meeting? I said, I am. And he says, well, you come be the greeter with me. I said, the greeter? How do you be the greeter? And he said, you just come, I'll show you how. I said, okay. So I got there, and he said, you stand on this side of the door, I'll stand on this side of the door. When people come, you have to shake hands with everybody. Don't let anybody in without shaking hands and telling them who you are. I said, but Edwin, I'll never remember who they are. How am I going to remember all those people? He said, you don't have to worry. They'll remember you. And again, I thought, oh boy, they're going to like me. You know, I was a mess, kids. You know, I was selfish and self-centered and all the wonderful things that we come to Alcoholics Anonymous with. And I had not a clue that any of it needed to be changed. Not a clue. I had these three kids that I couldn't stand. I didn't like them at all. Did not like them at all. They were a tax deduction for me. And my son-in-law said he'd still like me after my story, so I'm going to hold you to it. He's married to one of those tax deductions. yeah, they were a tax deduction for me, and they were an interference in my life. They were, there were things I needed to do, and they were just interfering with it. Now, I didn't think that that's where I came from, because I just didn't think about that. There's stuff that's generational. I always knew when I was growing up, there are things that I am not going to let happen with my children. When I would wet the bed, I would have to stay in my room for a week. Now, if I wet the bed three times in 1 week, I was in my room for 3 weeks. And here comes Saturday, Friday, and if I wet the bed on Saturday, I was in my room for another week. I mean, if I was getting out. That was part of the abuses that went on. There were other abuses. There was sexual abuse. There was mental abuse, emotional, physical abuse. You know, I was a mess when I got to AA. I didn't drink a whole lot, but I drank just enough to get me here. Believe me, I drank enough to get me here. I started drinking when I was 14 years old, and I got sober when I was 24. And I didn't drink a whole lot, but I'll tell you that the last 6 months I was on a white wine diet. I dropped 60 pounds. And I just wanted to drink to shut this off. I couldn't stand it telling me stuff anymore. I'm no good. I'm never going to measure up. There's nothing worth living for. Didn't like those kids. Didn't like the neighbors. I didn't like nothing. Nothing was working out. I just wanted it all to go away. And the best that I could shut it down with was to drink. And I could get to a certain spot, but I could never stay there. I always had to pass that spot up. And it ended up gutter stumbling, pissing in your boots, throwing up drunk, you know. That's what real ladies are made of, you know, real ladies. I am, you know, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I never thought at all that there would be anything that I needed to change about myself. I just thought that when I came to AA that y'all would tell me how to tell those people out there to treat me, because they weren't treating me really nice. And then everything would be all right. And I came to AA and I found out a whole nother ballgame existed. You know, the rules were all different then. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and I met this gal who, you know, it's really odd because I sobered up in Costa Mesa, California. And when I called Alcoholics Anonymous that night, they said, well, here, let me give you a phone number and you call so-and-so. I don't even remember the name. They said, you call so-and-so and they'll talk to you. And I said, no, wait. Don't hang up. I remember saying that, just clear as a bell. Don't hang up. I was afraid I wouldn't call back, you know. So she connected me to the gal. This was in 1979. Now, I don't think they had call forwarding then. I've been to that central office in Orange County, and they do not have a switchboard. Mm-hmm. I have no clue how they connected me to her. And through the years, I have taken it as a godsend. You know, he must have connected us. She asked me if I could just not drink between then and the next day, and I said, sure. And I was going to go to court the next morning on assault and battery. My husband had beat me up. My face looked like a bowling ball. Bruises of every magnitude. I had Crayola crayons. I had nothing on my face. So I got there and went to the court. Then she what really got me is she took the day off from work. I still get emotional about that because I really felt like my life was on the line, and no one ever did anything like that for me. She took the day off from work to meet me at an AA meeting. I was just flabbergasted. And when I got there, we went and sat down. I was shaking, just horrible. I went and sat down. They got me some coffee about half full. And I'm trying to drink it. And I had a Nancy on this side and a Nancy on this side. And this Nancy over here goes to share. And I'm trying to get this cup to my face. And I'm doing this. And she's sitting over here. And I remember her saying, I remember feeling the way this gal is feeling sitting next to me as I'm trying to get this cup to my face like this. And I just never in my life ever knew anyone ever felt the way I felt. And I put the cup down and I stood up and I turned and I reached for the door and I covered my face because I knew I was going to start crying. I didn't want anybody to see me. Of course, the whole room's full. So I reached for the door. I started crying. I stepped outside and I was blown away. And so the first Nancy that was going to meet me there, she came outside, put her arms around me. She said, welcome home. I was just, I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it that I was in a safe place. I had never felt safe in my life. And so my AA jaunt began. You think I would be grateful and stay grateful? No. No. Newcomer. So I put my eyes on the guys first. You know, after I got a few, you know, we clean up really good. We clean up real fast. Get to looking good, smelling good. And so then we go to the meetings and we find out where he is. Look at him across the room. We know that's him. Of course, they're across the room looking at us saying, oh, that's her over there, you know. What a mess we are. It's like one wreck running into another wreck, you know. So I always thought that I was to be married, and so I was never taught what marriage is all about. I was never taught what marriage was all about. I never was taught about relationships. I didn't learn any of that until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I learned about marital relationships through my friendships with those of you in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I get married, and it didn't work out, I just go get me somebody else. Marry somebody else. I didn't think it was a big deal. I was never taught that. I just couldn't help what I wasn't taught. But my story, I think, sounds like a typical alcoholic. I was married 7 times. I don't know why that's not typical for a drunk. I don't understand that. I have had a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous in Bakersfield poo-poo me because I've been married 7 times. Well, at least I'm honest about it. How many times you been living with people, I'd ask them, you know? You sinners? That's what I would tell them. So, you know, so I got married and then I quit getting married. When I learned why I was getting married, I learned that I didn't have to get married anymore. And the reason I learned about why I kept getting married was because it's this thing called fear of abandonment. And it has something to do with this sexual abuse. I don't know why it's tied in like that, but it is tied in like that. For me, it is. And I was afraid that you were going to go, or I was afraid she was going to get him, so I'd go get him and marry him. And if I married him, then he wasn't going to go anywhere. He would stay with me. Then after the love connection wore off, then I was packing up and moving on. And I was packing up, moving on before they could leave me. I don't know how all that works, but man, did it work. It was quite a dynamic in my life, 7 times. And I had to go for a deposition a few weeks ago. One of the first questions he asked me is one, where I lived. I couldn't tell him, the attorney. And the second question is, how many times you've been married? And I looked at him proud, 7. I was proud because I knew they were going to try to use it against me, try to get me if I said only 1 or 2 times, and then he'd paint me a liar. And I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous to not lie if I don't have to. So, yeah, I did. I said 7 times. I was proud. What other names have you been known by? And I rattled those puppies right off. And he was writing them all down. Then he went back and says, what was the second one? What was the fourth one? And I told him again, I didn't care. Because I figured that if I had missed one of those husbands and not married him, I might not be here with you tonight. You know? And so, yeah, I've been married 7 times, and I was telling the prosecutor about it. I said, I just don't want it out there. You know, it's different when you're around drunks. You expect nonsense like this. But she said, don't worry, Sally, my mom's been married 5 times. I said, 5 is not 7. She said, just don't worry about it. I said, okay. So that's what happened. So, you know, what I learned about relationships that I guard it with the most precious place in my heart, my relationships with people today and for some time, and that I respect them, I want to hear them, and I want to see them, and I want to connect with who they are when they are sharing something. And I feel very privileged when that happens between me and thee. I feel very privileged. I have these 3 kids. They're 45 and 44 and 42. And my girls don't even remember me drinking, although they might tell you they do. They're lying. But my son does remember. And my grandkids, I have 7 grandkids, and they'll never remember me drinking because they weren't around when I was sober. I'm so grateful. And then I have these 2 little great-grandchildren. One I call Charlie. Her name's actually Layla. And the other one is Mako, but I call him Buddy. And they are only going to see my goodness as I shower them with all the gifts that I can. I really want them to like me. I want them to like me a lot. You know, I'm not anymore out in life and trying to impress people, but I do try to read people, and I try to see. I know what it's like to be sad in your heart and look around and not know if anybody really cares enough to listen to you. And I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous that I might be the only somebody that you talk to today, and I want to be there and show up for it. And that's what I try to do each day. I try to pay attention to what you're not telling me. And I don't always get it, but there's a gal that I went to this place called Close Mentor, and it is in Mishawaka, Indiana, right next to South Bend. I went in there just looking around. I didn't know what it was. I thought it was like a Plato's Closet. Well, it is. Plato's for the young people, and Close Mentor is for the older people, me. So I went in there, and there's this gal in there working the counter, and she just was She just had this sadness about her. I just, you know, I've never paid attention to other people that much, but Alcoholics Anonymous through the years have taught me how to plug into people. And being in and out of prison for 30 years, that helped me a lot as well. And so we got to talking about this, that, and the other told her it was a Red Hatter. And she said, oh, her mom this and her mom that. And then somebody pops up and said something about her clothes being in the dryer. And just, this gal pops up and says, yeah, my clothes were in the dryer. My mom went and got them and threw them away. I said, what? No. Your mom? Your mama? She said, yes. And I said, why? She said, that's, I don't know, that's just the way she is. She's mean. I said, oh my gosh. And I just saw this sadness on her skin. She didn't have this healthiness, this glow that I was taught about in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I looked at her. I said, what's your name, honey? And she said, Jessica. I said, Jessica, I want to tell you, my mama, if she was here, she would die to be able to wash and dry my clothes. But on the other hand, I would go miles and miles to be able to tend to my mama. I just, that blows me away. She told me a little more. She's going to school. She moved out of her folks' house, and her and her twin sister were living in an apartment. And she was going to school. She's got one more year left to be a teacher. I was so thrilled about that. And I told her I was really impressed with her, all of her energy and all of her stamina and of going every day to school. And I said, praise God. I said, are you working tomorrow? She said, I am. And I said, oh, okay. Well, listen, I got to get, because I got this, that, and the other juice. So I said, I'm going to send you something, honey, for you tomorrow. And I'm hoping that it's going to touch you in such a way that you're going to know that you're not alone here, you know. And so I went home and I called Edible Arrangements, and I had her sent an edible arrangement. She got it and she called me up and she started crying. And I had to get off the phone. I couldn't stay on the phone with her too long because I started crying. And she just said, Sally, no one's ever done anything like that. Why would you do that? And I said, well, I can't say somebody did that for me, but I can tell you that someone did so much more for me than send me fruit. And I just wanted to touch you in such a way and let you know that people in the world, there's goodness here. There's goodness here. And so I got her email. We're friends on Facebook. And I sent her one for Christmas. And I love to see her smile. I love to see her smile. So she had to quit working there at the closed mentor because she's doing her student teaching now. I'm so thrilled for her. I'm just so thrilled. I don't even know her, but we just have a connection. I learned about that connection between me and thee in Alcoholics Anonymous because I would allow myself to get out of the way, out of the selfishness, out of that way, so that God could step up and show me the way with y'all. And that really is the deal for me. So, you know, I go into prison and sometimes these guys would talk to me and tell me this, that, and the other, and I'd just be beside myself not knowing what it is that they needed. And so I would just put it out there. And what is it that I could do for you? What can I do for you? And they were just astounded that I would even ask such a question because that opens me up for all kinds of stuff. And yet none of them ever was out of line with me, never out of bounds, no one ever. And they never asked me for money or this or that or the other. Most generally what I got from those guys was, Sally, I just really appreciate that you're listening to me, that you're talking to me. And that is a big deal. Most people just want to be heard. They want somebody to know that you genuinely care what's going on with them. And I learned how to do that in AA because that's what they did to me. You know, I told you that first sponsor I had, you know, she came out and hugged me out and told me I was home. Yeah. And then she started taking me to H&I, Southern California. So then she started taking me to the Bat Factory. I could get in the Bat Factory before I get in the prison house. So she took me to Camarillo, Tascadero, Patton State Hospital. Now, I was seeing some of that behavior in there, and that wasn't really too far from where I live, let me tell you. I like some of that. And then after I was a year sober, then she started taking me into Chino. Then I went to Susanville. Then I've been panel coordinator 10 years there and been to North Kern, Kern Valley. Been in the SHU, been in the... I mean, you know, the SHU, that's where inmates, that's the worst of the worst. And that's, those inmates throw feces and urine on the staff. Well, I worked with those guys in the SHU, and they never, ever, in 30 years that I was going in and out of prison, did I ever not have one woman or one man show any bit of disrespect to me. And I am so grateful. You know what I did? I started going into prison because my brother was in prison. And I couldn't get to him, but I could get to other people. And so my sponsor said, that's how I'm going to stay sober. So I started going. Washing coffee cups first, then ashtrays. That's when we smoked in meetings. Metal ashtrays where the smoke, the black was, oh dear Jesus, it was really caked on there. And then she got me being the secretary and the finance person and the literature person. I mean, I was everything. GSR, HBO, CIA. I was everything. I was everything in AA forever. But it was just what I needed. It was just what I needed because all of those things got me out of me and got me into you. And you have been the answer to my prayers. You have been the solution to the problems that I've had. Because when I am with you and working with you, I don't have to focus on the stuff that's happening to me. But I've been able to learn through you and what you've been going through so that I could apply that stuff to me. And the very things that I may be telling you that somebody else told me is the very thing I somehow need to be hearing. That's how it works, I guess. They say one drunk talking to another. So, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. My son, I wanted to tell you, is 45. He's 10 years clean in another program by the grace of God. I haven't had to bury him. I am so grateful. You just don't know. I have a middle daughter who, she was 6 years old when I got sober, and she would tell people, my mother is sloppy ass drunk on the couch, drunk, and I had to raise the other two. Well, Billy was 7, Becky was 6, and Denise was 4. So I don't know how much raising she did. But okay then, that's her story, and she can tell it how she wants to tell it. But then my other two say, well, I don't know what mother you had, but it wasn't our mother. There must have been somebody else in there raising you up. So I just let them have their story and do whatever it is, think whatever they think they got. You know, I made my amends, not only verbally, but I've made my amends physically by being different, acting different, loving them different, loving their children different, and listening to them. And I try not to tell them what to do. I have a control issue. I've never met an alcoholic who didn't. But I do try to listen to them. And what's really helped is me living in South Bend. They love me so much that I'm in South Bend. And I love that they're loving me in South Bend, because I love South Bend. You know, absence makes the heart grow fonder. And when I got off the plane last week, my daughter is there, and I just knew I was going to start crying when I saw her, because I just missed her so much, you know. And I'm so glad that I miss her. Because then I'm going to go back after, in January, I'm going to miss her some more until I come back out, you know. I love being able to do that. I love being able to feel things that I'm not embarrassed anymore to feel. And I'll tell you, one day last year I was feeling a little punk. We have a Notre Dame fan in here? Woo-hoo! I live about a half a mile from Notre Dame. I live in Roseland. And I was feeling pretty punk. I'll tell you what happened. You know, my husband died in 1991. A lot of things have happened to me. Last year I was diagnosed with bladder cancer. So I went and had surgery on September 8th. And I just took my yearly checkup and I'm clean. Yeah. So, then a couple of months ago, I went in to see the dermatologist, and he diagnosed me with basal cell melanoma. You see it? Stitches. And they called me yesterday from Wyoming and said, "Ooh, we got it all, Sally." I was so happy. Praise God. Yeah, I'm so happy. So, So I want to tell you, my husband died in 1991. Around 3:30 in the morning, I woke up and I was feeling a little amorous. And I never did take the first move, but I did this time. And so we made love, and he had a myocardial infarction. I had a massive heart attack. That was a long ride from Ensenada, Mexico to Bakersfield. It was a very long ride. And I remember pounding on his chest and doing CPR, and there's no phones in the room, and I couldn't get him to respond. And finally, I was able to get people awake by running up and down the halls, and they finally got somebody in there, and the Red Cross, they come in. They came in with a white panel van. They don't have ambulances, didn't have ambulances then. And they come in, and one of them started IVing him while I'm still doing compressions and breathing. And then another guy started doing compressions. I was breathing. And then finally, I worked on him about 20, 25, 30 minutes, something like that. And then they started working on him. And after about 20 minutes, they just looked at me and shook their head. And it's the only father my children know, because their father wasn't around. And that was a hard day. But I didn't find it necessary to take a drink. I didn't find it necessary to take a drink when they told me I had bladder cancer. I didn't find it necessary when they told me that I had basal cell melanoma. I didn't find it necessary. I got beat up last year, and he broke my arm, and I have a plate and 6 screws. I didn't find it necessary to go take a drink when that happened either. And he's going to go to prison, by the way. And I didn't find it necessary to drink when anything has happened. My mother died. My father died. I had to put my dog down. My dog. I had to put my dog down. I didn't ever find it necessary to drink when my son got married, when my daughter got married, when she got married again, when she got married again. I didn't find it necessary to drink. I'm telling you, they're going to learn what you're doing, and they're going to do it. I haven't found it necessary to get, you know, to drink behind arguments I've gotten into with my children, or love that I've gotten into with my children. I haven't found it necessary to take a drink. Just never a drink, never solved it. Just never solved it. I drank for 10 years, and nothing that I drank over ever got fixed. I like to tell you, I got to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1979, and I stayed. Well, I'd be older than 35, but I didn't stay. I drank 3 times. I drank it 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. I drank it 3.5 years. And my sponsor asked me after 3.5 years, she said, "Sally, why is it that you drink?" I said, "I don't know. I really don't know, Nancy." She said, "Because you won't get honest. You're a liar and a thief." And I was just bowled over. She always had to talk to me because I didn't understand anything else when she talked to me nice. I had to hear that stuff, that hard stuff from her. I knew she cared. I absolutely knew she cared. Anyway, last year I was feeling a little bit punk, and it was September. I'd been in the house out there about 2 weeks. I hadn't gotten in the car and driven around South Bend or Mishawaka or Niles, Michigan. I hadn't gone to see anything. And just so much had happened. You know, I was back there. I hadn't talked to my children or anything about things. And I was just kind of feeling a little punk that day. That's what I say when I'm feeling a little bad. I say I'm just feeling a little punk. And so I thought, well, I think I'll get in the car and drive around. So I did. I got in the car and drove around. And I ended up at Notre Dame. Going through the campus, I thought I'd take a look. It just so happened to be the busiest day of the year when all the students are there trying to get in their dorms. I didn't know. I just knew there was a lot of traffic. So I parked. I saw these goalposts. And I thought, oh, my gosh. So I parked the car, and I walked across the thing there. And these two guys had the gate open, and I looked in. I said, oh, can I come in? Sure. I said, my granddaughter may be going to go to Notre Dame. She wants to be a doctor. Oh, maybe I come in and take a picture? Sure, come on, they said. If I walked in, I looked around like this, and I said, where's the bleachers? Don't you guys have a big old football team here or something? He says, yeah, this is only the practice field. I said, oh, well, I didn't know. I said, oh, so I took pictures, talked to him a little bit, laughed, da, da, da. So, okay, thank you. I went and got get in the car, and I'm thinking, gosh, you know, if I don't ask them, I'll never know. The worst they could say is no. So I turn around, walk back over there, and I said, hey, listen. And they pointed to me where it was at, the big building over there. I said, you think there's any way you could take me in there? In the big one? And sure, come on. We'll even drive you right in. I said, you will? Oh, I was so excited. I said, okay, follow us. So they got in their cart and I got in my car and I followed them right under the bleachers and parked right where everyone else was parking. Got out of the car. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. And so we walked out. His name was Chip. Walked out, stood on the bleachers. I was looking, and they were working on the bleachers. They're working on them, and they were adding like three or four thousand more seats, 5,000 more seats. So now it's got about 85,000, I think, 85,000 seats. So we're talking, and he took some pictures of me standing by the bleachers, and we're getting ready to go, and I said, I'm looking down at grass, and I'm thinking, well, if I don't ask him, I'll never know. So what's the worst he could say? No? Now I'm thinking all this by myself here. So I looked at him, I said, Chip, you think you could take me down on that grass down there by the Notre Dame thing? He said, yeah, come on, Sally. I said, no way. Yeah, I brought a picture of myself down there standing like this in front of the ND down on the field. And I'm telling you, that's a big old stadium. And it was just what the doctor ordered that day. You know, I was feeling really punk, and I just needed to reach out a little bit. And, you know, when I reach out to people, I don't always reach out people in AA. Sometimes I reach out at Closed Mentor. I just don't know where I'm going to reach out at, you know. And so at my house in South Bend, I feed the squirrels, and then the moles come up under the... Oh, those guys. But I want to tell you, I quit getting married. But I do have a man in my life, and I love him dearly. I love him dearly. We spend Sunday afternoons together. His name's Johnny. Johnny Dear. And Sunday afternoons, we mow the yard together. I sit on him, and he mows it for me. He's my favorite man out there. And he has his own little shed that he sits in all pretty. I wipe him up. He treats me like a queen. I love him. He holds my water bottle while we're driving around. Yeah, I love him, Johnny. Yeah. Told my kids I found a new man, and they just about, I won't tell you what they were going to do. They were shocked, and I said, Johnny dear. And then they laughed. So, you know, I also carry these lunch pails. I'll tell you that, and then I'm going to shut up. I have these purses, and I just really carry them, mostly get people to talk. And how I started doing it was in California. When you walk, everybody walks like this. Nobody will talk to you. So I start carrying these purses. I call them purses or lunch pails. Would you hold that up, Lino? I got that for Christmas from my granddaughter. I love Bart Simpson. I love Bart Simpson. And so that's my new purse, kids. That's my new purse. And I carry different kinds of lunch pails with me. So I have a 1920s lunch pail, and that comes with a thermos. I'm so excited about that. I want to tell you that I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the people in it. Even the sicker ones, the better. We really relate. And I, you know, I don't know that there's been anybody that I've come across that I thought ought to leave town. But there's been a lot of people that I've come across that I knew I had something to give something to, you know. And I learned about that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful for you and for the new women that I got to meet tonight. I'm so grateful that you were here. I hope you stick around and give us a chance. And if you don't want to give us a chance, give yourself a little bit of a chance. Let us work on you a little bit, show you how life is. Life is good. Especially in South Bend. Thank you.